Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Why is Irish dancing still so dominated by girls? What's keeping boys off the stage? Does it even matter? Joining me is Róisín Cathalán. I should call her Dr. Róisín. She's a leading voice in Irish dance research and a former champion herself. She knows a thing or two about Rinka, and someone's been asking all these questions for years, and hopefully she has the answers. Dr. Róisín, good morning.
Good morning, Oliver.
You're live in Limerick this morning.
I am indeed, yeah.
And you're a proud Limerick woman. Is that where you're from?
Yes, very proud Limerick woman, yeah.
At what age were you now sent out to begin your dancing life?
I was dispatched out at about 3 and a half. I think my mam, Deirdre, needed a break from one of her kids at that stage, yeah.
You were chatting a lot, perhaps, at 3 and a half.
Perhaps, yes.
Would your mum, was it in the family anyway?
Yeah, my mom was a beautiful dancer herself, so she always supported me as I went through my own dancing journey, actually.
Okay, and among the siblings then, were you girls and boys?
So I have two sisters and a brother, so my two sisters also danced and my brother didn't dance.
Doesn't that say a lot already in this conversation? And what about yourself now? You've got children yourself these days?
Yeah, I have a daughter, Faith, and she's 12 and she does dance, yes.
Faith, lovely name. Is she good?
She enjoys it very much, which I think is the main thing.
Oh, good. Does that mean that you don't put her to competition?
No, she doesn't compete, actually. There's an opportunity to do what's called grades in Irish dancing, so you can kind of progress up like you would in music. So she does that. And she just really enjoys the classes with her pals, and that's her journey in Irish dancing, and I'm very happy for her to do that.
Very social. Your pathway was obviously lots of competition. Did you love it from the beginning?
Not hugely. Well, I did love it, but not all the time. So competition is tough, and there's a lot of dedication involved, and sometimes you love it and sometimes less so. I really enjoyed my time with Riverdance and the performance aspect of it, I think, probably more than the competition.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What did you not enjoy? Was it the stress of it?
Yeah, you know, I suppose it's different for everybody, but sometimes, you know, you're doing well and sometimes you're not doing so well, and you put a lot of pressure on yourself and there's a lot of preparation, and it can be really fantastic when you succeed and it can be really disappointing when you don't. So it's like anything, but, you know, great days and not so good days, like anybody who competes at an elite level, I suppose.
It's extraordinarily physical, isn't it? As well as the enormous skill required.
Absolutely. And I think just with the research that we did lately with boys, this was one of the main things that they brought up, that people don't really appreciate how hugely physically demanding and accomplished you have to be to be really good at this and at an elite level. So in terms of your cardiovascular fitness and the strength and the flexibility and the power that's involved, it's up there with any sport that you could care to mention.
On top of all of that, then, you have this kind of pageantry, don't you? Particularly for the girls. There's the Guna wigs, of course, with the little ringlets.
Yeah.
Makeup.
Well, that's for the kids who compete at open level over a certain age. And I suppose as somebody who endured 40 foam rollers in my own head as a small kid, I don't have a massive problem with the wigs or the pageantry. It's part of it. And I think people come down on it really hard. And you don't take into consideration all the fantastic things that are associated with the fitness, the camaraderie, the, you know, we have an obesity crisis in our country. So anything that gets kids active and involved, you know, I think that should be really applauded. And so the makeup and the wigs, you know, every genre has a look. So that's just part of what our look is.
Yes, that's true, for sure. You obviously, Riverdance came at a very good time for you, didn't it? You were the perfect age.
I was actually a little old. I'd just finished dancing. I won't say what age I was. But, you know, I remember having to kind of get back into it, and very, very sore legs. And my housemates at the time will attest to the fact that I was dancing up and down the hall trying to get myself ready, and that I was pretty crippled after a week-long audition.
Wow.
But really lucky to get in, and a fantastic opportunity. And we had a reunion, a 30-year reunion of the show a couple of months ago in Dublin. And just to see the friends and the all the relationships, and to actually see children of people that I danced with now dancing in Riverdance, there's nothing like that to age you. But that was a really wonderful experience.
You loved it. You were the lead.
I was the lead for a couple of years, yeah.
Wow.
I also danced in the troupe. I did lots of other things. I got the opportunity to be an assistant stage manager. I did some drumming. So lots of fun and lots of opportunity with that.
There were lots of opportunities. And you met love there too.
Yeah, my husband Mario was the technical manager in the show. We got married there, and he's now in Limerick with me.
He's a German in Limerick.
He is indeed. Although it'd be hard to tell if you heard his accent these days.
Really? We know, of course, the Riverdance phenomenon. It made millions all around the world. Were the dancers very well looked after? Did you end up massively rich afterwards?
Oh, I'm absolutely loaded. Yeah, absolutely. No, we were very well looked after from lots of perspectives. We were well paid and we were looked after well in terms of, you know, our hotels and just general support. So an absolutely wonderful opportunity. Yeah,
that's great to hear. And of course, Riverdance, it changes everything for Irish dancing, doesn't it? And we're still looking at it in pop culture, all coming from that phenomenon 30 years ago.
Yeah, it's an absolute watershed moment, and it really did bring Irish dancing far beyond the diaspora around the world. And we see pop references it in TV programmes and movies all the time. And lately, some of your listeners will be familiar with an influencer called Mr. Crooks, mm-hmm. who has been sharing videos of kids practicing, and he calls them whimsical skedaddlers.
Yeah, it's a good phrase, isn't it?
It's fantastic. Yeah. And it's just brought it to a whole new market. We saw Beyonce's mom has been talking about this wonderful dancer, Morgan Bullock, who's mm-hmm. became a river dancer, and she's featured videos of her dancing to Beyonce's material.
So yeah, it's, you know, Tina Knowles.
Tina Knowles, yeah. So it's still out there. It's growing with each new generation. And in terms of the dancers themselves and what they're bringing, and the evolutions in choreography and material and rhythms, there's just endless creativity. They're phenomenal dancers.
I don't know if you've seen the movie Sinners.
I've heard all about it. Yeah. And friends of mine in the States have said, you need to see this Irish dancing scene. So I actually do need to make that
really
a priority and see it. Yeah.
It's vampires in 1930s South America dancing to the Rocky Road to Dublin.
Yeah,
it's
fabulous combination.
It's an amazing film. It's really, really good. But it kind of highlights, doesn't it, that Irish dancing is very firmly in the conscience all around the world.
Yes, very much so. It's part of the dance zeitgeist, and it's up there with all the other great genres like ballet and contemporary and tap now, I think.
And so you, what led you to kind of, obviously you had this phenomenal career in dancing and river dance, and you decided to go into research and academia, or what was your career after dancing?
So river dance led me to physiotherapy.
Yeah, and, so that makes sense, yeah.
So I was working clinically, and I was aware of all the injuries, having, you know, been a dancer and mm-hmm. suffered injuries and seen injuries, and my supervisor, or my colleague in the University of Limerick, Kieran O'Sullivan, helped me on a PhD journey, and I looked at the injuries in elite adult Irish dancers at that stage. And then that led to a whole host of research on injury in, you know, different types of dance, but particularly Irish dancers, and looking at causes, and then looking at things like, you know, understanding of nutrition, and most recently looking at the boys' experience and men's experience in Irish dancing, and why we seem to have less male dancers than we do female dancers.
What about those injuries, by the way? Are they very specific to Irish dancing, and how bad are they?
So you won't find an Irish dancer who has danced for any length of time at an elite level who hasn't suffered an injury. And
really?
They do vary from mild to very severe. We looked at the injuries of elite adolescent Irish dancers, and they were more than their peers in contemporary or ballet dancing would have sustained. So it's very marked. There's a considerable level of injury, and it can vary from, as I said, multiple mild injuries up to severe career-ending injuries, mainly to the foot and ankle, unsurprisingly, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it's you know, it's very, very common.
Is it a kind of a slip that causes it, or is it just overtraining?
So it's a multitude of things. So overtraining and overuse would be one of the main things. One of the big challenges for Irish dancing as well is that we have a year-round calendar. So kids can compete all year round.
Yeah.
And for adolescents, when they're going through that growth period, they really need a break. They need a break physically and psychologically. And we don't always have the opportunity to take that, or, you know, that can. And also the other thing with dancers across the board is they tend to specialise really early. So athletes, I heard your section on Camogie there, mm-hmm. they'll tend to play loads and loads of different sports until they specialise maybe at 13, 14.
Yeah.
Dancers tend to specialise a little bit earlier, and that can lead to issues of muscle imbalance and overtraining. But there are lots of reasons. There's a whole host of psychosocial reasons why people get injured.
What about you? When you stop dancing, do you just stop because of people get older, or are you injured? Because you don't see older dancers, do you?
Well, you do actually, but people stop for a host of reasons. Sometimes they've just, you know, had enough. They want to do different things. Their lives take them in different reasons. Sometimes their teacher moves away. Sometimes there aren't opportunities to compete or perform. Sometimes they'll continue to dance until they're, you know, 40s, 50s. So river dance again changed the mould for this. Up until that point, once you kind of finished competing, maybe 19, 20, 21, you either became a teacher or you did a little bit of cabaret work. But it's not unusual now for dancers to continue to perform into their 30s. I have a colleague, Brendan the Gully, in University of Limerick, who I dance with in river dance. And he's still dancing at a really high level in his 50s.
Wow.
So again, Riverdance kind of changed the game. It's like anything. Once you keep doing it, you probably can do it. If I was to try and dance now, I'd probably need an ambulance. So it's just if you keep going, you can sustain it.
Right. Let's get into that question then. The boys and Irish dancing. Is there a shortage of male dancers? How bad is this problem?
Well, there's definitely less male dancers, markedly less male dancers than there are female dancers. And it can be a problem in that sometimes for teachers you don't have enough boys to field a team for a competition. But for the boys themselves, if you're the only boy, there's only one or two boys in a class, it can be, you know, it can be tricky to stay there. You don't feel that you have your peer group there. So this research really, it was stimulated from a course I run in the University of Limerick, and we were talking about boys in dance, and I knew the literature from ballet and contemporary dance that there was lots of barriers. But we didn't know from Irish dancing what those barriers were.
Right.
So we spoke to over 100 guys, boys and men, aged 13 up to about 70,
oh, yeah,
about their experiences and what they had found. And so they found lots and lots of good things about dancing. They found lots of bad things, and they suggested pathways forward that we can maybe entice more boys into dancing, which I think would be an amazing, amazing thing.
Yeah.
So some of the positives they found were that, you know, it's a really important opportunity for them to display their cultural pride.
Yes.
Again, that physicality.
It's more important than ever now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think having, you know, an identity is wonderful. And as an international dance genre, it's nice for people to be able to show their Irishness. And of course, there are people who have no Irish roots whatsoever practicing Irish dancing.
Yes, so, as we heard Ed Sheeran recently announcing he's culturally Irish, and this has become a sort of huge identity thing, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. But I know he has Irish roots, but people who have absolutely no link at all just engaging it. I mean, there's schools in over 40 countries around the world. I have a colleague who's a great school in Japan, for instance. But some of the barriers then were around lack of recognition of it being, you know, a really accomplished activity.
Right.
Also, I suppose, unsurprisingly, things like, you know, the bullying, the homophobic slurs, the stigmatization, the perception that it's a feminine activity. But interestingly, that only kind of happens between the kind of early teens, the period of time when people go into secondary school or
really?
High school. And it tends to burn out. So that's nice. But I think if you're a parent or a teacher, it's just something to be aware of, that this can be a tricky period for those boys. And it's mitigated by if you've like more boys in the class, or if you've good peer support or good family support, that can really help that. And the other thing, I suppose, was that competition can be very limiting for a lot of boys. There are some guidelines that say that you need four boys in a team of eight, for instance, to be able to field a team for a competition. Mm. And if you've only two boys, that can knock boys out of that ability to compete, or just that they want to do more expressive things, and sometimes competition can be a little bit restrictive in that regard.
I presume the bullying aspect comes from people not involved in dancing, who you're going into secondary school, everyone's finding out what their hobbies are, and there's a boy who dances. And
yeah,
off
yeah.
It goes from there.
Very much so. It's from people outside of the kind of Irish dancing community. I suppose once you're in it, you understand it, and you understand the demands and the dedication that's involved and the technicality. And that would be consistent with research in other genres as well. So lots of boys in the research and men spoke about the strength in numbers. So big schools with lots of boys, you know, there's kind of insulation there, and
yeah,
they have that camaraderie and that friendship that helps support them. But outside, if you're the only boy and people find out that you're an Irish dancer, sometimes it can be a little bit tough for them.
Yes, and it's interesting, the research, one of the positives that your dancers told you about is the camaraderie and community among the fellas.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. They talk about, you know, guys that they met, that they maybe met three or four times a year, and they are still great buddies now, or people who have trained together or danced together, and they have WhatsApp groups and they'll go to soccer games together. And, you know, these friendships are maintained for decades. I have colleagues here in Limerick, and they're constantly putting up pictures of golf reunions and weekends away that the boys have, that I think the girls don't have to the same degree at all.
Interesting, right.
Yeah.
Paul is in touch with us. He says he's heard, he's in Dublin 7, he says, I've heard Irish dancing being described as a sport in the US. That kind of thing would help, wouldn't it, if we...
Yeah, that's absolutely. So I suppose this is a bit controversial. Some people say it's an art. Some people say, you know, it's a sport, and to say it's a sport can diminish it. I call it an aesthetic art, or an aesthetic sport. So, but one of the things that came out of the research is if we could promote the physicality and the transferable skills that you could, if you're a dancer, you can bring those skills, that cardiovascular strength, that power, that flexibility to other sports. Mm-hmm. And we've seen examples of that. So a couple of American footballers who used Irish dancing to work on their footwork and their dexterity. So promoting it in that fashion and promoting a really positive masculine, or just, you know, a positive view of dancing that isn't so female oriented, could be really, really positive for Irish dancers.
And of course, role models are important, and we have them.
We have amazing male role models in dance. We have the boys from Corja, we have David Gainey, we have the Gardner brothers that lots of people will be familiar with. And also having just role models within your school or locally, guys that show, look, I do it, I'm succeeding, I love it, it's fantastic. That came across in the research over and over again is really important. And also male teachers, having access to a male teacher can be really important, both stylistically and for the choreography, but also that person has, you know, he understands the lived experience of being a male Irish dancer and can support that.
In relation to lads doing Irish dancing, this is a listener. My nephew Connor is 18. He's been dancing for about 4 years. He loves it. He's made so many great new friends. He's won a lot of competitions too. Lots of fun adventures ahead for him, I'm sure. So he started unusually at 14, but he's got past that barrier, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And it's great to see people pick it up. And we see the growth of adults in Irish dancing, male and female, becoming really popular. And lots of men enjoy Irish dancing. And they don't experience any of that. And they're sort of almost, they're front and centre because there are fewer of them. And they really enjoy that persona of being a male Irish dancer. And the other thing, just in terms of opportunities, the opportunities for boys, if you stick with dancing, once you hit that 18, 19 age, the shows are still out there. There's loads of touring productions.
Yeah.
And it is much easier just because of you know, the availability of boys versus girls to get into shows and have those amazing experiences of touring and performing and meeting new people in interesting, you know, interesting places to go.
Of course, because it's a shortage, obviously, if you're getting to 18, you're trying to join a professional show.
Yeah.
It's going to be easier to access it if you're a fella.
It really is. And that's always been the case. And that was one of the things that came across as well. You know, the opportunities are there. So just keep your standards up and people will come calling looking for you.
There's the text errors have gone there. One of the other things they said is boys only classes. Would that help matters?
Yeah, so that came across. So having an opportunity to get all the boys in a region or in a city together would be fantastic. There are a couple of barriers potentially to this. So there are rules around what's called association in some of the organisations where they shouldn't be kind of training together. And I think trying to overcome that would be fantastic for the greater good of Irish dancing. So getting boys together, getting them to meet people of their own age with similar backgrounds and creating that community would be an amazing opportunity. And also for those boys who don't have access to male teachers on a regular basis, that would create a possibility for them to be able to have that opportunity as well.
Another texter, Breeze, is in touch with us to say, we had an amazing goalie for our primary Gaelic football boys team, I think primary school. He did ballet as well, was incredibly flexible and able to get over to cover either side of the goals.
Yeah, so one of the, yeah, absolutely. One of the respondents is a teacher from Tipperary, Michael Ryan, and he talked about the fact that his local principal got all the boys on the hurling and the football team involved in dancing. And because they were kind of elite athletes and they were doing great and they were popular in the school, it really gave a bit of kudos to the dancing. And they could see the benefits of dancing in terms of cross-training for their sport.
Yes.
So something like that is also really helpful.
Do you think that will happen?
I think if there's a will, there's a way with all of these things. Mm-hmm. I think there's people who are involved in Irish dancing are tremendously passionate about it and they really want to grow it and they want to involve boys. So look, you know, a conversation has been started. Let's see where it goes. I would love to see it happen. And I know that the boys would love to see it happen. It can only bring positive things, I think.
You're hopeful about it. You're optimistic, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you see things like Mr. Crooks and you see it being still being showcased and you still see these wonderful ambassadors like the Gardner brothers and David Gainey, mm-hmm. you know, there is something wonderful there and it's unique and it's special and I think we need to capitalise it and grow it as best we can for the girls and the boys.
Yeah, there's kind of a great irony, isn't there, that we know the strength of the manosphere, which is part of the bullying of dancing not being seen as manly enough. Mm-hmm. But all the people you mentioned there, the Gardner brothers, Carja, David Gainey, they're huge on social media in the same kind of space because of their dancing.
Absolutely, exactly.
What are you going to do next, research-wise?
So next, we're just starting a project looking at the experience of Irish dancing teachers supporting neurodiverse pupils. So we know that this is a massive area and, again, hasn't been looked at.
Yeah.
So that's underway. We're also looking at developing a tool to guide Irish dancing teachers and other genres in helping to decide when kids are well enough from a physical and a psychological perspective to go back to dancing after a serious injury. So that can be really challenging because confidence can be an issue. Physically, they mightn't be well. So those are our two projects that we're working at the moment.
And are the girls all fine in the
girls,
art?
The girls face similar problems in terms of injury. So there's a huge level of injury. And I think one of my main drivers in my research is for people to appreciate the psychosocial aspects of injury. So we focus hugely on their flexibility and their balance and their strength, and that's all appropriate, and their load. But we need to look at people's mental well-being, things like anxiety, stage fright, depression, fear of performance. All of these things have a massive impact on injury and wellness and the ability for people to have a really healthy and a long career in dance.
It's very good to have someone like you looking into all these things.
Well, I'm doing my best.
I feel sorry for the women because the competition to get into a dance troupe must be absolutely incredible.
It is ferocious. It really is. And they are phenomenal. Their ability, I adjudicate still, and I'm just, you know, gobsmacked. As my mom says, you guys didn't dance at all 30 years ago. When we see what they're doing now, it is absolutely incredible. They're phenomenal athletes.
There's a question
dancers.
I know you'll have the answer to. Is there any research at all on the Shannos dancing and its more free-flowing style? Asked Padraig.
I don't know, actually, so I don't have the answer to it. Certainly, it's not an area that I research. Possibly some of my colleagues in the Irish World Academy at the University of Limerick have done work on that.
But it's competitive as well. And someone's reminding me that the pinnacle of Flack Yol na Héireann is the All-Ireland Ceilidh Band competition, which took place last night. And huge congrats to Glór na Dun, Ceilidh Band, with members from Mayo and Sligo, also All-Ireland champions. Energy, talent, skill, fantastic music. Loads of work goes into this by all the bands, so they deserve a huge mention. And there'll be another homecoming there for Glór na Dun.
Absolutely.
Everyone, keep on dancing. But in the meantime, you're looking after them, Dr. Roisin Cathalan, Associate Professor in the School of Allied, is it Applied
School
Health?
School of Allied Health.
Allied Health in the University of Limerick. Thanks a million.
Lovely to speak to you,
Oliver.